Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the closing out of another week at the Damage Report with me, John Derola, and also a guy who's just up until recently annoying me, Brett Ehrlich is here.
Yeah, but at least I took the cough drop out of my mouth before I started the show.
There's no cough drop. I have totally chewed it.
It's clinky clanking around.
I've been
in your
sick
face.
For what? No, it's not. I've been sick for 1 month. I don't know what I have.
And that's not my
doctors
fault.
Can't figure out what I have.
And he has.
And here he is mocking me.
He has
on
a
my
little
show.
Known condition called disrespect for the audience.
That's not, you can have more than one condition.
I'll tell
I don't
you
care
what
House says.
I don't know how you're still sick. Just the amount of menthol in whatever you're sucking on is clearing out my sinuses.
Okay, yes, mine are quite clear. You know what else might clear out your sinuses? The news.
Good God.
Okay, you're gonna be cleansed inside and out by the news, including John Bolton. He has responded to some of the criticism of him, and he in turn shall be criticized. It's the circle of Bolton. But also, we've got Dershowitz. He's angry at the characterization that people have had of his legal argument, even though it was entirely accurate. So we're gonna have that. But also, I am so excited because we not only have garbage people of the week, we're gonna be trying to do that each Friday. We have combed through the dump. We've plucked out one person who exemplifies being a garbage person in politics.
Yes, I think we might have the same person.
You think?
I couldn't think
Don't
of another garbage
it.
Person, so I'm very excited to see. And
okay.
This is just know, this is the last opportunity you have to spit that thing out of your mouth before we.
There is literally nothing in my mouth. I
oh
don't know
God.
What you're talking about.
How does it still smell so intensely?
It halls. They pack like 10 cough drops worth of flavor into one.
God bless
They're
Mentholyptus.
Not a sponsor. You know what? Let's just not do the show, honestly. Okay, I'm kidding. Anyway, also, I was excited.
Anyway.
Now I'm not excited because it's with him. But we have another top 10. This is going to be the top 10 ways that Donald Trump could win in 2020. From people who don't want him to win, but we're gonna try to be fair and come up with scenarios that he could win in. But that's assuming that we get to that point. I might just walk off the set. But anyway, before we get to all of that, let's start off with some of the news involving impeachment, I guess. John Bolton has been attacked quite a bit over the last week, ever since it was revealed that he believes he can directly link from a conversation he had with Donald Trump, the quid pro quo and investigations with Joe Biden. So he's saying he has personal experience that happened. Since then, he has been attacked by virtually everyone. Brian Kilmeade's still in his corner. That's pretty much it at this point. And he is now responding to accusations that him doing what he did, former Trump administration officials revealing what they had talks with Trump about is fundamentally wrong. So he was at a private dinner in Austin, which is no longer private. And he said, all of them acted, all the people who have since testified, including himself, acted in the best interest of the country as they saw it and consistent to what they thought our policies were. He says, the idea that somehow testifying to what you think is true is destructive to the system of government we have, I think is very nearly the reverse, the exact reverse of the truth. And so yeah, I mean, of course he's gonna say that. We still at the end of the day can't say 100% that what he is describing actually happened. But everybody has been painting the same sort of picture, so it's a little bit easier to believe his account.
Yes. It is very clear from what's happened in the last week. I mean, I want to say week, like it's a recent thing. But in the last few months is that the Republican Party has defined what's right versus what's wrong along the lines of whether it benefits them in their perception electorally.
Mm-hmm.
And it is completely divorced from whether it is actually the right thing to do or the wrong thing to do ethically or morally.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately for all of us as people who live in America, the ability to stay moored in truth, reality, and morality and ethics was what the framers had in mind when they framed the impeachment process.
Mm-hmm.
It was for the ability of senators to say, I know what would benefit me electorally or not, but I am supposed to be the impartial juror who sits here, judges what's right and wrong and acts accordingly.
Yep.
And the way they've turned on John Bolton so quickly, a man who at one point-
On a dime.
At one point, you know, when we weren't in the bounds of impeachment, John Bolton, a guy who absolutely represented something that I find morally repugnant, but they gravitate towards so much, which is just war hawkishness.
Mm-hmm.
That was how they at least defined their value system. Yeah. Was like, we are the kinds of people who protect America, whether you believe it or not, by making it stronger internationally and setting up regimes around the world that benefit us geopolitically and economically.
Yeah.
Now they are just like, no, Trump says he's stupid, he's stupid. Trump says he's bad, he's bad. And that is fascism.
Even though when John Bolton was brought into the Trump administration, the defense, I guess not the defense, the reaction from those on the right, electeds and medias, was not, we like John Bolton because he's been around a long time, or we like John Bolton because he's effective, or we like John Bolton because he agrees with us. They almost all are on tape saying we like him because he's loyal and honorable. Nobody could impeach the person that he is. But we'll do our best try a few months from now.
It just happens all the time too.
Exactly, yes. Because in the end, what is right is what benefits them electorally and their donors economically. And that is literally it, which is obviously, it's ridiculous for a party that says, we above all others, and the Democrats say that they're, you know, generally in support of like American Christians too, that they say we have this value system. It's got books and everything. You can go to a building every week and learn about it. But in reality, they don't care about any of that. They care about electoral, it's real politics. That's all it is. I did want your reaction to one other bit of news involving John Bolton though, and that is that despite the uproar surrounding his new memoir, publisher Simon & Schuster is standing firm on its intended March 17 publication date. And that uproar, by the way, includes a White House threat for them to not publish the book.
Thank God it's on March 17th because it is St. Patrick's Day and I will need many, many drinks when, I don't know, I buy all these books, by the way.
You do? I bought one or two.
I bought Fear, I started reading it, I even bought Rumsfeld's book back in the day, and I read it and I get about halfway through and go, what's the point?
Yeah, I think this is kind of embarrassing to admit, I bought Comey's book, I think.
Did you?
I read the beginning of it, but the problem is that almost all the good stuff is spoiled beforehand.
Yeah.
Anyway. You know, John Bolton, I just want to say, closing out a week of, I have said more nice things about John Bolton this week than ever before or ever in the future. Because what he's doing appears to be right, let's just bear in mind, he's awful.
Well, but I'm consistent because I've always wanted to hear from John Bolton. The thing was, I just didn't get to before.
Yeah.
Because I didn't know what he sounded like. I remember reading about him and seeing him and going like, those are two different things.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'd never heard from him. But I always wanted to hear from him back when he was like super duper hawkish and known for that and lauded by the right for that. I wanted to hear from him because I'm like, no, go on and tell me exactly why we need to be doing this.
Yeah.
And it would unravel because hearing for more information from him has always been beneficial to my arguments and the furtherance of what I want this country to accomplish.
Yeah.
And the same is true today. Yeah. I still want to hear a lot from John Bolton. Yeah. And people on the right are still trying to stop me.
Yeah, you're not going to. No witnesses. It doesn't look anyway. Okay, let's turn to one other story to close out the beginning of this. Alan Dershowitz this week made the very clear argument that if a president believes that he's awesome and the country benefits from him being its leader, then anything he does to get reelected is in the public interest because they need to have him. Now, he doesn't like that interpretation or that acknowledgement. He has in fact gone so far as to challenge anyone who says that about him on Twitter. He says, I challenge my critics, especially those who are deliberately misinterpreting my arguments, to a Lincoln Douglas type town hall debate in which name calling is prohibited and intellectual arguments must be responded to with other intellectual arguments. So, I don't think that's gonna happen. And he's been going on the news, like Ari Melber this morning. He goes on, he says, you guys are being unfair, I didn't say that. Ari played the literal tape of him saying that, but it doesn't matter. Catching them in a complete lie doesn't do anything anymore.
So Alan Dershowitz has not perfected the art of good argument.
Mm-hmm.
Alan Dershowitz has perfected the tone of seeming lawyeriness.
Yeah.
He has been able to make a bunch of people take him seriously when he's saying the dumbest things.
Mm-hmm. That's his skill.
And that is fine for like a legal professor, I guess, because they're teaching you how, like, I guess part of our system is that you have to be able to defend any client no matter what. But for anyone to still be taking this guy seriously, and similarly with Bolton, like call out Bolton for trying to grift off of his book release. Mm-hmm. This guy's absolutely trying to grift off of some Lincoln Douglas style debate.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous.
100%. Yeah. And what's more ridiculous is Like, it's not like I did a video about the Dershowitz thing yesterday, and nice. my fear of the acceptance of that argument. Not explicitly, they're not gonna say they all agree with that, but they clearly do. And the thing is, because it's not just Dershowitz, it's not like he's the only one saying effectively that the president can do whatever he wants. That was their legal defense and is their current legal defense in New York. In a filing to a federal court in New York, the Trump legal team argued that under the US Constitution, a sitting president can't be subjected to any criminal investigation except as part of an impeachment inquiry. The team's argument was not merely that Trump can't be hauled into court and prosecuted, but that a president can't be subjected to any type of criminal process because it would distract him from his constitutional duties. So it would distract him from the public interest, I guess, is what they're saying. That's their official legal argument. And when you add it on to the fact that this president believes literally that he can do anything he wants, it's scary. And when I say that, I am not exaggerating. This is a video, a mashup that was put together by Media Matters' Parker Malloy, who's a friend of the show. Take a look at all the times he effectively has said just that.
Then I have an Article 2 where I have the right to do whatever I want as president, but I don't even talk about that.
If you use your rights, if you use your power, if you use Article 2, it's called obstruction.
Someday you ought to read a thing called Article 2. Read Article 2, which gives the president powers that you wouldn't believe.
Article 2 allows me to do whatever I want.
You talk about Article 2. So your position is that you can hire or fire anybody, stop or start
that investigation. That is the position of a lot of great lawyers. That's the position of some of the most talented lawyers. And you have to have a position like that because you're the president. But without even bringing up Article 2, which absolutely gives you every right.
So a president can't obstruct justice?
A president can run the country. And that's what happened, George. I run the country and I run it well.
When the president does it, it's not illegal?
I'm just saying a president under Article 2, it's very strong. Read it. Do you have Article 2? Read it.
It will be
Article 2 powers. I could have done anything I wanted. I don't even bring it up because we don't even get there. Absolutely, I have Article 2. We could have used that and I wouldn't even have to bother talking to you about all of the other things. I wouldn't have to talk to you about conflicts. I could have fired Mueller for conflicts. I could have fired anybody, but I didn't want to do it because they said, let it play. Play out. It's a hoax.
Every public official that I know believes that his election is in the public interest. And mostly you're right. Your election is in the public interest. And if a president does something which he believes will help him get elected in the public interest, that cannot be the kind of quid pro quo that results in impeachment.
So a great job by Parker in putting that together. But don't let the like happy times music fool you. This is Trump, who is the president, saying he can do anything he wants, and all of his legal defenders are agreeing with him. The Republican Senate is entirely agreeing with him. He can do whatever he wants.
Article 2 doesn't say that.
No, it doesn't say that.
Article 2 is, let's not bring it up. Read the transcript. That's the problem. Mm-hmm. Article 2, read the transcript. This is Trump's move. Saying just Alan Dershowitz defends me is Trump's move. He creates. It's like when they say, when someone reads you your Miranda rights, mm-hmm. they're conveying to you information, but you just kind of hear that it's happening. You take it to mean something. To you, it just means I'm getting arrested and you move on. Mm-hmm. When someone says Article 2, what it should mean is this is one of the articles of the Constitution and sets down the framework and enumerates the president's powers. And there are other branches of governments that are co-equal and have powers to check it.
Yeah.
But he has so divorced it from reality that Article 2 and read the transcripts, both of which the things he's citing contradict the claim he's trying to make.
Yeah.
He has just gotten it to be some kind of refrain that when you hear Article 2 from him, it means he can do anything. And when you hear read the transcript, it means the transcript doesn't have anything incriminating, when that could not be further from the truth.
Yes, and they all agree. His defenders agree. His base agrees. In right-wing media, they agree. I have a feeling Sean Hannity will probably change his view on Article 2 if Bernie Sanders wins the presidency. No. But for now, anything goes. Okay, we're gonna take a short break. I guess he's gonna join us after this.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, The host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
"You must unlearn what you have learned."
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Okay, I want to jump once again into the topic of money and politics, particularly for people who might be paying attention to their first ever presidential election. Money is incredibly important. The people who are donating, what they're getting for their donations, can wildly affect the outcomes of our elections. And joining us to discuss this topic is congressional candidate in Arizona's 6th District, Anita Malik-Wick. Welcome back to the Damage Report.
Thank you for having me.
Glad to have you on. And in particular, after you have published a piece on Medium titled "Money Can't Buy Me Votes," delving into this topic. So tell me about your article.
Yeah, you know, we have seen a spending spree, a kind of a race to raise in politics over the last 10 years. As Citizens United, this is the 10-year mark of that. And over that time, you know, if you look at this, we talk a lot as Democrats and as progressives about corporate PAC money, and that's what Citizens United did. But for me, and as I ran, I'm running this cycle, and as I ran last cycle, what really alarms me is all of the outside influence. That's not just corporate PAC money. It is big donors controlling really the narrative that's happening in D.C. You know, we see the percentage of money that comes in is really the donor class is really, really quite small in America. It's, you know, less than 0.5% of people that are giving that over $200. And so all this is so alarming to me. And I believe in publicly funded elections. I believe what you said at the beginning, that your vote really shouldn't. What you're getting for your money, it shouldn't be what you're getting for your money. It should be your voice. It should be your vote that really matters. And that is what this article is about. It's about saying, you know, I'm going to model what I believe should be our system for races up and down the ballot, but particularly look at those races down the ballot. What are we going to do when we just say, keep raising money, but you're not out there engaging with voters if you're sitting there and trying to just bring money into your race? We've got to rethink how we look at money in our elections.
Yeah, and as you point out, it's very few people that actually donate a significant amount of money. They get a significant return on it, even though in many cases, it doesn't matter to them the money they're donating. It doesn't affect them in any way. I want to throw out a little fact that I saw, and it was that Mike Bloomberg, a few months ago, his fortune was estimated at $51 billion. Since then, he entered the Democratic primary. He has spent over $250 million running, and his wealth was just estimated at $61 billion. So, like, it doesn't even matter that they're flooding the system.
Right.
So that's the top end. But for a candidate like you, obviously you're talking about expanding your conception of the ways that money influences races. Mm-hmm. As someone who's trying to enter the system, what are some of the ways it's affecting the way that you're running, the expectations for your candidacy?
You know, I think at the federal level, so if we look at what DC thinks of my candidacy, they think that that's not possible. You know, it's obviously, we know it's a money game. Everybody wants you to raise the most money and equate that in some way to a win. I have been trying again since 2017 to prove that that is wrong. I have proven it in a couple races, and we want to really show that, you know, this is possible. And it's important to me not to say, you know, a lot of people say you've got to play the game to get there and then we'll fix the problem. But it is such a strong principle of mine that to fix the money in politics, we have to actually model what it should be. And we have to rethink, why are we spending so much money? So perhaps in a presidential race, you're going to see this big, large spend on TV ads. And, you know, does it work? Does it not work? There's up to argument. I don't believe TV ads work. But so then what about the rest of us? Why are we all competing to try to get TV ads when, you know, nobody's going to be watching those? They're going to be drowned out. And we're spending, that's been the rhetoric, I'd say, in our race, is you need more money to win this because you need to run TV ads.
Yeah.
It's such an outdated tactic. I believe in community building. I believe in grassroots. I believe in taking principles actually from brand building that I've done in business, which is let's just engage with people and help them spread our message. And so if we look at this differently and look at why we're spending so much money, consultants and TV ads, it shouldn't be the reason.
Well, so, and to the experience that you've had, because this is now, you ran previously, you were, yeah. I saw some of the numbers that you sent, and you were massively outspent, but you feel that you have come up with a sort of more efficient way to spend the money, and right. You have the results to prove that, correct? Okay, that's unfortunate. We're going to have to cut it. Hopefully, we can resume our conversation with her at some point in the very near future. We do have a lot more planned, though, so stick around after this. I think that with the right candidate, Donald Trump can certainly be defeated in 2020. But there are a number of different ways that things could go wrong, and he could still pull out a win. And so now we turn to the 10 ways that Donald Trump could still win in 2020. And joining me for this list, Brett Ehrlich.
God, it's good to be here.
We've each got five.
Yep.
And I wanna let you go first with your number five way. First of all, are you ranking these in any way?
Yes.
Yes, how?
The one I came up with first, and then it goes to the one I came up with fifth, which is a little
misleading. That's a way, I suppose.
Because it starts with five and ends up with one, but I think one is the most climactic event.
Uh-huh.
Two is actually kind of funny.
Okay,
but
fine.
There's a theme in the first three.
And
the
first, really fast.
We have no time. Let's just go straight to it. Number five.
Sorry. Okay, I'm glad you're joining me for the last top 10 you're going to be a part of. So what's number five?
Establishment candidate plus a sense of entitlement. There is this weird inertia that has happened within the Democratic Party where they think they just get like the candidate they think has won because it's worked before, and the people who are hired to like say the agenda of the Democratic Party keep getting hired no matter what, mostly because they've had the job before.
Mm-hmm.
And just this sad sense of entitlement, it's kind of a thing that happened with Hillary Clinton where they didn't really apply themselves,
mm-hmm.
and didn't really care about the candidate's ability to be a candidate.
Yeah.
And do retail politics or television or any of the media that we rely upon to communicate someone's personal, like, you know, platform.
Yeah.
And yeah, which is super ironic because that's how they work all the time. Like, do you want to have a beer with this person? Like, no one wants to have a beer with Hillary Clinton no matter what.
Mm-hmm. But I don't want to have a candidate with the vast majority of the candidates.
Yeah.
Or a beer with them. Yeah, they think you idiots, we got this. We got a million consultants. We got this. Forget about that stuff about needing to like motivate people or inspire groups to. We don't need any of that. We got this guy. We think he's gonna be fine. We're just gonna go for him. It's so entitled.
Yeah.
Okay, my number five is going to be, I think that Donald Trump could win if the economy started to do well. And I know a lot of people are like, but the economy is doing well. Look at the stock market. I mean, if the economy was actually producing gains for real people, if you had not just unemployment going down, but people not being underemployed, wages actually rose. There's not a lot of time for this to happen, but I think that if you saw that happen, and probably through no fault of Donald Trump, if just something happened where wages went up and employment actually mattered, it was moving in the right direction in a way that actually benefited people, they weren't getting like three jobs that suck. I think that that would be powerful because historically it is very, it's hard to beat a president if the economy is doing well. I think that a lot of media figures are looking at the NASDAQ and are like, oh, this thing's done. But I don't think when we say that the economy matters in presidential elections, I think that you have to be a little bit more specific about what that means in reality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I believe that. And that is a
good. And I rank basically as most likely to happen. I don't think that the economy is going to magically turn around the next 3 months.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
I get that. And that is a framework where I've seen that if the economy stays the same or improves and other things don't change within like how galvanized and energized the electorate is, then Trump would still eke out a win.
Yeah.
I read that like 3 days ago.
Exactly.
My number four is Bernie wins minus establishment support.
So he gets it and then they're like, our worst fear,
so
I guess,
the thing.
Is they're like, I don't know.
Our
we're
worst
not help
fear
them.
Is their wanton misrepresentation, is the thing that they believe,
mm-hmm.
and taking revenge based on a false pretense. So what they believe is that Bernie just, I've talked to so many people who've been like, Bernie reluctant. I'm like, Bernie went to like 40 rallies and for more than Hillary Clinton did.
Or something.
And they're like, reluctantly. It's like, what? I'd love to see a reluctant rally. It's a rally. It's not reluctant. People are like, yeah, let's do it. And like the quotes that I saw, I think Maddow was in some of them. Like the clips that were pulled in montages I saw where it was him saying, vote for her. We've got to, we've got to, we got to. But they don't believe that. They think that Bernie just was like, no matter what the stats are. So they'll do the same, which isn't the same because their perception of reality is so warped.
Yeah, and you know, they wouldn't spend, you know. And I think he could still win, but obviously it would be helpful to have some unity as they say they want. Yeah, that's a dark one.
Yeah.
Ah, that's a good one. Okay. My number four is going to be Trump can win if Trump actually gives the bare minimum of a damn and does something to help people that are not in his base. I've laid out this theory before. If he was like, here's my plan. We're going to spend $100 billion and we're going to pull out every inch of lead pipe in this country. I am going to cure our nation's, like lead poisoning epidemic. Everyone's ignored it. Democrats have ignored it. Republicans have ignored it. I'm the guy that is going to give America a lead-free future. And if he actually did that, that sort of thing that shows that he can rise above his petty xenophobia and, you know, the white identity politics and all that and actually do something big. He only needs to move a couple percentage points.
Yeah.
It's not gonna happen, but it would be so easy.
But it'd be an awesome ad. Trump, he lays pipe. It's like the Trumpiest ad. This guy really knows that. I know how to lay some pipe.
Yeah. And behind the scenes, he would give all the contracts to his buddies. It'd be super corrupt, but it would be something.
My next one is my final mathematical one. I don't know. I thought we'd have lower thirds. My bad. That's my fault. You don't give a F. UDGAF.
Like if like the voters.
Voters don't care. And that gets to the other thing that I just mentioned briefly, which was if all the other things being equal, Trump will win re-election. But the only thing, it was like an Oxford study, said that if there is higher voter turnout by the Democrats on par with 04 and 08, then the Democrats win in a ridiculous landslide. Mm-hmm. And that, I think, was calibrated for like geography. Like,
it matters where the turnout is.
Yeah. So it's not just like California and New York making it bigger landslides in those states, but rather in the key states. If more people just give an F, that's what's necessary. And by you, I mean everyone. Mm-hmm. I don't mean, hey, you, Bernie bro. Hey, you, Hillary, you know, Schiller or whatever. Like, but I mean, people need to care.
Yeah.
And I will say this. I think that if people are more energized, hopefully, because in the last election, there was this thing that I believe happened that I've heard people talk about, but and this is just my theory on like polling and secret places versus like caucus type locations and even polls that you take on the phone where you don't want to tell anyone that you're terrible or anyone the thing that you're thinking, but you there for some reason you don't want to communicate to anyone. With Trump's candidacy, last time, a lot of them were like, I just can't have Hillary win and I'm not going to tell anyone that. But when I close when I go into my booth and I punch the number, I'm just going to be like, I'm not even voting for this or Trump.
Yeah.
This time, I hope there are more people who just go, I am so done with this. We can't.
It might go in the opposite direction.
Doing it. Yeah. That secret nudge that we only needed like 70,000 for last time was just to go, I just can't do this anymore.
Yeah.
Whoever's on the ballot.
Yeah, and it's certainly possible. And 2018 had really high turnout, so that could actually happen. My number three will be Trump can win if the media hasn't learned any lessons from 2016 and goes back into the same sorts of terrible behaviors that give him a boost in the way that he needs. And that is things like falling for his tricks against the opposition, allowing him to totally define the candidate running against him. And they want to seem serious, so they will take all of it really seriously. Joe Biden is obviously ready for that to happen to him. If Biden is the candidate, all the Ukraine stuff is still going to be a big narrative. And if the media allows that, they want to look serious and they want to take it really seriously, the same way they did in the last week before the election with Hillary Clinton, that could be really bad. If they play his rallies uncontested, if they fill panels with both siders and Trump sycophants and liars, if they fearmonger against socialism, if the candidate is Bernie Sanders, all of this sorts of things, if they go back into their, well, we want to seem fair, that could be really helpful to Donald Trump in a close election.
Yes, I am totally with you on that. And if you want a little taste of it, South Carolina will represent all of America in the primary. They'll be like, this is it, Biden's back. Mm-hmm. And the other thing in the back of their mind is like, okay, so we did all of these things and it looks like Bloomberg outperformed on Super Tuesday, huh? Oh. He lives down the street from me.
And this is my list is meant to get more likely. I think there's at least 50% chance the media does all of these things.
Number two is giant spiders that can fly. I feel like in a world where giant spiders that can fly happen, Trump wins the re-election because all of the worst case scenarios have happened.
That is true. The problem is at the end, they still get us because his solution for every problem is to put up a wall. And the spiders can fly.
Mm-hmm. If the air could knock over
the wings of the spiders, knock over the wall.
Thank you.
You're an idiot.
I don't think they have number wings. Number two, they just can fly.
This might be more likely than the spiders. That is, if Trump takes us to war, which is still a very real fear that I think everyone should have, that I definitely have. And I don't know for sure that this would be enough, that it would work in his favor. But we know what America is like when America goes to war. We know what the media is like when America goes to war. The media was okay this time when we were on the brink with Iran. But if our boys were like marching across the border, how critical is the media gonna be? And in a close election, it's not just a disaster for the substance, that the war would be a disaster, but he is totally the sort of person that would do that to get elected. He was how many times he's tweeted about that.
My number one is World War III. So there you have it.
Yeah.
I agree with you in all the exact ways.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, my number one is actually very similar to your number five, both because it would definitely help him to win the most, and it's the most likely to happen if the Dems nominate effectively another Hillary Clinton. And by that, I mean someone with that same sort of approach to governance, someone with that same ability to be cast as 100% corrupt. There is nothing that makes it more likely that Donald Trump would be elected than if we allow him to run his 2016 campaign again. That's all he wants. And if we get Biden, it's not that Biden's the worst person in the world, but it is going to be 2016 all over again.
Yes, we have Trump on tape saying, oh my gosh, I don't want Biden. Because he's, I think he's corrupt and he do corrupt things. Oh my God, he's so bad. But we have Trump unknowingly behind the scenes on tape saying, yeah, I'm scared of Bernie Sanders.
For this reason.
For this exact reason. Authenticity, unimpeachable character when it comes to like, and I think toe to toe on a stage.
Yeah.
Two guys yelling at each other,
yeah,
one of whom I support.
He's not scared. He's not going to be scared of Biden on the debate stage. So anyway, those are our 10 ways that Trump could get reelected. If you are watching this on YouTube, feel free to leave a comment of what you think we might have missed, okay? And if you have suggestions for future top 10 lists, we want to have some fun. Okay, with that, we are going to take a break. When we come back, we are going to have some fun at Rick Santorum's expense after this. Okay, so throughout this impeachment thing, we have heard a lot of bad takes this week. Tons of bad takes. We're about to hear one of the worst, and it's from Rick Santorum, who's on a panel with Jake Tapper. Take a look at what he thinks will happen coming out of this impeachment process.
I think what some people are concerned about is what precedent does this set? This, I don't think that you, as president or a senator, would ever do this. Would ever ask a foreign power to help you in an election by.
I'd be very surprised if Donald Trump's going to ask any more foreign powers.
Well, why do you say that?
Because
there's a price here.
But you should not be surprised because he had this call with the Ukrainian president the day after Mueller testified. Yeah. He went out on the White House lawn and made an offer to the Chinese. I think it's very clear. So, what Lamar Alexander, we can give him a little credit for weaving this carefully or better than most senators. However, he's saying, let's leave it to the electorate to make the judgment in 2020.
It's all out there.
The problem with that is that President Trump has shown himself willing and susceptible.
Do you really believe?
And having the desire to seek influence from a foreign government at
home. Do you really believe that Ukraine announcing an investigation of Joe Biden would have any material effect on this election?
Yeah.
The answer is absolutely not.
I think we all do. So you may be in the minority there, but he's willing to do more. He's willing to do anything to be elected, and that's what the danger is.
Quick question. You voted.
There were at least three stupid positions that he took there.
Yeah.
Let's go through them.
Right.
The first is Come on, after all this, is he gonna try to break the law?
He did, and that was exactly what I, because I heard this in the car driving in here, mm-hmm. and I had a little conversation with Rick.
In your mind?
TCPP over there. Like I had mm-hmm. a, just like, I said it out loud in the car, because I do that, because I'm insane. Mm-hmm. But it was, this was, and they said it right after. This, he did this the day after getting kind of called out for doing one thing A, mm-hmm. the next day, he did thing A again,
yeah.
with a different country,
yeah, but
with
now,
country B.
But he's paid such a price, as Rick Santorum says.
Oh my
That's
God,
the stupid
he's
thing
such
number
a
two.
Moron.
What price? Yes, he's been impeached. It'll go down in the history books. I'm sure it frustrates him. I'm sure that he rage eats fillets of fish. But he's also been shown that there will be no actual consequences. He can do whatever he wants. The Republicans are already on the record saying it's all fine. We don't care. He's definitely gonna do it more.
Rick Santorum had some success in 2000, bum, running for president as mm-hmm. the guy who just kind of hung around mm-hmm. as Romney gained momentum, as like the last vestige of the super Christian vest wearing goody two shoes.
Yeah.
But not because he was smart, not because he had any really great strategies or anything like that. But, and Francesca and I were talking about kind of things that happen in politics, and she put it this way, like the sun finally shined on him. Mm-hmm. Like it was time, right, yeah. in the same way with, in the round before, with like John Edwards and John Kerry. They were just the ones who didn't go negative in Iowa when everyone else did. Mm-hmm. And they became the two nominees. They yeah. did well and emerged. So Santorum has all this like fake cred. Mm-hmm. That in moments like this shows that he doesn't know anything.
Yeah.
He is the heel.
Yeah.
He is a moron. Trump will continue to do this. And so this proves he not only doesn't understand Trump, but he doesn't understand Mitch McConnell. Mitch McConnell doesn't care. It's always been about whether he has enough votes to do the thing that keeps him in power.
Yeah.
And what I mean proves my earlier point about Rick Santorum is he's such the goody two shoes moron evangelical, mm-hmm. and not all evangelicals are moron, but he is a good goody two shoes moron evangelical that he can't even think about a president who in his mind is a nefarious moron being this much mm-hmm. and this nefarious a moron
being willing to do it more. And I guess so. There was two stupid things. The third would be, let's just let it be litigated by the public. And that's a stupid thing that a lot of people have said. The crime that he has committed and that we're worried he'll commit again is not shoplifting or punching someone in the face. It's breaking the law to manipulate the outcome of an election.
Yeah.
Saying, well, then let's just leave it up to the election is stupid. The whole thing he's trying to do is make the election irrelevant. What a stupid position.
And how simple it was. Trump. So whether it would work or not, also, he had the idea to use the announcement of an investigation to help him, because going into 2016, the announcement of an investigation
into
helped
Hillary.
Him.
Yeah.
Comey's into Hillary. So he did that. Just because the crime may or may not work, mm-hmm. the heist may or may not work, doesn't make it legal.
Yeah.
It is still illegal. And it is still wrong. And I can't believe that Rick can't get it through his head.
Yeah, saying, well, you think that would have helped him? What? Yes, even if we hadn't had 2016,
this
I would definitely think that it would help him. And we just had the same thing in the last election, and it definitely helped him.
And this guy, like yesterday, was talking about, everyone knows what the president did was wrong. They just don't care. They believe Bolton. They just don't care. So, but it doesn't hit Ricky the way it needs to.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so frustrating to watch.
Poor Ricky.
Santorum, okay. Not Strom. He's
exactly.
great.
Strom. He's great. We're gonna take a short break. Stick around. Every week we dig through the political garbage and try to find who best exemplified being absolutely the worst. This is Garbage People. And this week, as with last week, we have Brett Ehrlich. Who is your garbage person of the week?
So there is someone who emerged as pretty garbagey today that I didn't have time to print something out for, but I am going with the person who emerged as garbagey last night in the same vein. So hopefully I didn't take your answer. Lamar Beelzebub Alexander.
So not only did you take my answer, you took my picture.
Oh, what, the one on Wikipedia?
Yes.
Oh no, wherever did you find it?
Mine's bigger.
We both, so. Oh, so now my control's out the window, because I think maybe this doesn't print on our printer, because we both tried to print it in color and it failed.
It wouldn't.
It might just be this actual file has become so tainted
yes.
by the garbage person that is Lamar Alexander.
Why is he garbage person?
So I was listening to someone on like.
Do you want his quote?
I have it here.
Okay.
But like, there's such a long quote. But I just want to say that the other day I was listening to someone who was in the Senate during the impeachment question time. And while it was happening, said, Lamar Alexander started to write longhand on a piece of paper. I'm very excited to see what it is. And it turns out it was the most epic Twitter fail of all time. And there's so many things along the way, which is why I don't want to sort through yours.
No, you go.
It was inappropriate for the president to ask a foreign leader to investigate his political opponent and to withhold United States aid to encourage that investigation, but essentially says, but we can't impeach him for it. So here's what happened in that tweet. He acknowledges everything I want him to.
Everything.
As having happened. And that is a crime. And the way, and a terrible crime that fundamentally goes against how the framers drew this country up to be. Mm-hmm. Power of the purse, checks and balances, corruption. It is the
power.
And what he says is corruption. It's when the reason he did this to investigate his political opponent was for his personal gain. So he used his position of power for personal gain. That is corruption. So here is the legal argument that Lamar Alexander is using to get himself out of jail free, or thinking free, as you put it on, I think your Twitter, it's a really great tweet.
Thank you.
I'm just gonna call it just inappropriate. Mm-hmm. That's it. He's going to label it as such,
yeah.
Which is also annoying because later on he says this needs to be a bipartisan thing according to the framers. But no, you just chose not to vote for it.
Yeah.
All the things that would typically make something bipartisan, like being the right thing to do, which you acknowledge in this part of the tweet, you just deny, you label it as such.
Yeah.
And for that, you are a garbage
person. Wait. This could be the first ever dual dunking.
Go for it.
Let's do it together.
Thank you, Lamar.
God, he's garbage.
Also, just like
he
reminding
it
you,
all.
No one had thought about Lamar Alexander in like 18 years.
I had not. he admitted all of it. And how sick are you of things Trump does that are substantive and damaging and unethical and indeed illegal being brushed aside as inappropriate? So basically, investigating your political opponents by withholding foreign aid is locker room policy. That's all it is. And he wants to be able to say, no, I acknowledge it was true. Like if he ends up, like if Trump ends up going to jail someday, he has like an out. But no, this is more offensively cowardly than the other Republicans that are just like, let him do whatever he wants, I'm not gonna acknowledge it.
Yeah.
This is worse in a way.
And my backup thing was everyone but Lamar Alexander that we're just not talking about.
Yeah.
Because but it's a garbage person, I respect
yeah,
it.
Exactly.
Even
yeah,
exactly. Dusty.
Yeah, it's like, you know, they say, like, set out ethical rules where if everyone accepted them, the world would be better off, that sort of thing. Often
yeah, I
the people.
The good place at the end.
That's true. Often,
well.
I did not see the ending. Often, the people who end up on garbage people are people where if we all acted this way, if all of our politicians acted this way, our country could not exist. Effectively, we get by because thankfully not everybody does this stuff. But Lamar Alexander, it couldn't work if we were all Lamar Alexander.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, as always, thank you so much for joining me. Very fun episode, Brett.
Happy half hour today. We have the creator of a new show on NBC.
Awesome.
About his family moves in with him because they can't afford healthcare. So
awesome.
Watch.
See you next Monday.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.